The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating, Culture Map's weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler. I have Morgan Weber and Matt Tanner from Easy's Liquor Lounge coming up in a little bit. But first, I'm joined by my co-host this week. She's the owner of Avondale Food and Wine, Mary Clarkson. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Great, Eric. Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for doing this. Let's dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one. Frank's Americana Revival will relocate from its home on Westheimer to the Alexan River Oaks, a luxury apartment building at West Alabama and Wesleyan. The new larger space will allow for a patio, something Frank's does not have currently, as well as a bigger bar, a larger kitchen, and eventually a companion coffee shop and cafe. Mary, let's kind of start at the beginning here. Do you have thoughts on Frank's Americana Revival? Do you dine there?
So funny you were talking about Frank's because you and I were just talking about this restaurant yesterday. I don't dine there frequently. I've been there before. I think it's good. I'm surprised that a restaurant like this would opt to go bigger rather than smaller. I think a lot of the trends for locally owned restaurants is to go smaller, but it's a new development. And a lot of times, depending on what deal they negotiated, they're probably able to move here for the same and or possibly less than what they were previously paying, and they get a whole brand new space for it. So kind of surprised, but hopefully they made a smart deal here, and having a patio is definitely important in this kind of post-COVID era we're moving in, or whatever we're in.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think Frank's does like very kind of classic American comfort food well, right? One of the better chicken fried steaks in Houston. People really like their fried chicken. They do a chicken pot pie as a weekly special. They do seafood. And it's evolved a little bit over the years, right? They sort of differentiated their kind of bar and lounge area as the White Star Bar. So this will allow them to do more of that. And I think you're right. Usually you wouldn't expect a restaurant to go physically bigger, but when you're in a big luxury apartment complex, being bigger makes a certain amount of sense because all of a sudden you have a captive population, particularly, you know, whether or not those people want to dine in, they will certainly want to avail themselves of getting Frank's to go. And so a bigger kitchen that can accommodate more to-go orders makes a lot of sense to me.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think being in a development like this gives them access to a whole new clientele they don't already have in addition to their existing clientele. So a possible big win for them.
Right. And it's close enough to where they are currently on Westheimer, just east of Wesleyan, that it's not going to change things very much. It's not going to be too disruptive to their basically River Oaks clientele. They're not going to get lost on the way to the new location. They can, you know, you can't quite see one from the other, but you almost can. And I think that's really important. I don't think they should move any farther away than they are moving.
Well, and I think they also get the benefit of a seamless transition, right? So they get to stay at Frank's until this new location is open, which I really think helps gives you the ability to have those conversations with your consumer, with your customer that you're moving down the street and they don't have to show up one day and wonder where you went.
Yes, no, I think that's very important because not everybody As confusing as it is to me, not everybody reads Culture Map. Not everybody obsesses over restaurants on social media, and particularly Frank's, right? Which has an older crowd, at least in my experience. You've got to do, they're going to have to do a lot of handholding, a lot of like direct customer outreach to make sure that everybody knows that they're moving, knows where they're going, and is ready for this transition, which we expect to come sometime early next year.
Yes, looking forward to it.
All right, let us move on to topic number two. Zanti Cucina Italiana, a restaurant in the Woodlands, is opening a new location in the River Oaks Shopping Center. Mary, I know you get up to the Woodlands every now and then. Have you been to Zanti Cucina Italiana?
No, I have not. I do go to the Woodlands somewhat frequently. I kind of stick to the same places there, but I mean, the growth in the Woodlands has been insane over the last few years. So there's definitely room for more dining options. And I think people are definitely looking for quality dining options. There's a lot of chains that go in the Woodlands, and some do very well and some don't. It's its own demographic. It is definitely different than Inside the Loop.
Well, yeah, let's come back to that. I do just want to add, you know, I sort of checked in with Anthony Campo Felice, the subtle foodie. He's my kind of go-to contact for anything going on in the Woodlands. He really likes this place, right? Handmade pastas, Neapolitan style pizzas. They do all the kind of classic stuff. You know, they do osso buco. They do seafood dishes. It's all done with, and you know, the chef is Italian. He's from Piedmont. So I think that speaks well to kind of what they're doing. And I think that will serve them well when they come inside the loop. Now, talk to me about the differences in your experience in expectations for the Woodlands versus where they're going in River Oaks.
Definitely more family friendly in the Woodlands, right? Like you would be remiss to open up a restaurant that only appealed to a certain demographic. It's a very, very family and corporate environment. So hours, you know, businesses here, the peak hour of dinner is definitely at an earlier time than it would be in the city, for example. And you definitely have to want to cater to a lot of these businesses that are in and around the Woodlands Mall area, the Anadarko Tower area. And so you have to be mindful of that. People drink wine here. They don't drink as much hard alcohol as they do in the city. It's, again, very family, corporate friendly.
Well, yeah. And I think that kind of gets to the difference between what Zanti is going to be doing up in the Woodlands versus what they're going to be doing in their location, the River Oaks Shopping Center, right on West Gray, you know, right down the parking lot from Brasserie 19, Hudson House, you know, across the street from Perry's. And maybe most importantly is that this is going to kind of replace La Griglia as the Italian restaurant on West Gray in the River Oaks Shopping Center. You know, they're, Not a lot has been said about the fact that La Griglia is going to have to leave its location that it's been in for 30 years, where it's going, what the exact timeline is, but we know that that's coming. So let me put it to you. What is Zanti going to have to do to get that La Griglia crowd to come and check them out?
Wait for La Griglia to close?
Well, yeah.
I'm kidding. But yeah, La Griglia's lease is not going to be renewed in this shopping center, so it will go away. I don't know when exactly that timeline is, but I just think with all of the new restaurants that are coming into River Oaks Shopping Center, I do think people will have more than Brasserie 19 and La Griglia to choose from. And I say Perry's, but in my experience, the crowds that go to Brasserie 19 don't really translate to Perry's. So they're going to have to figure out a way where they can do what Perry's didn't in terms of reaching out to people that kind of live and work in the area. I feel like Perry's is a very established namesake. It's just not one that people inside the loop and adjacent to River Oaks and Montrose are really craving. So they're going to have to make a niche within that market to stand out. I think that they absolutely can do this. And I do think that the arrival of, you know, three to four new restaurants in the shopping center will make people hop between them like they do perhaps in River Oaks District with Le Colonial and Taverna and Mad and Steak 48. So hopefully people will have drinks at one, maybe dinner at another, maybe dessert, you know, hop around a little bit.
Right. Taverna, of course, is long gone. It's
sorry, the French one.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And now why can't I think of it either? That's really bad.
But yes, the French concept that anchors the midpoint of River Oaks District. I mean, you see people, if you sit on the patio of Uzu or Locke or La Colonial, you see people literally make the circuit of walking around. And I think best case scenario, that's what happens in River Oaks Shopping Center.
Toulouse, just to clean that up, Toulouse.
There you go.
Apologies to Toulouse. So yes, right. We know that Brasserie 19 has been kind of rejuvenated. Now that Charles Clark is the sole proprietor. Hudson House from Dallas, which is kind of a casual oyster bar with burgers. We know that's coming right next to B19. And then Zanti is coming in November. And so you're right. There are going to be all these new restaurants, and they're each going to have to kind of find their audience, and there's going to be some shuffling. But I do like your thought that it could just wind up being this whole kind of vibe where, you know, maybe you start at Brasserie 19 for oysters and bubbles, and then you walk down to Zanti for pasta, and then, you know, I don't know, you know, nightcap at Hudson House, whatever. But it does have, there's a lot of potential for synergy.
Nightcap at Marfrela's, Eric.
Oh, maybe for you. I don't know how you spend your time.
Oh, I think you have a pretty good idea.
All right. Let's move on to topic number three. Killer Noodle, a ramen restaurant from Los Angeles, is coming to the former Cane Rosso space in the Heights beginning October 15th. Mary, this restaurant got some attention from beloved, the late LA Times critic Jonathan Gold, for its Sichuan-inspired Tantan Men noodles that are kind of like, it's kind of like Don Don noodles turned into ramen, spicy pork, you know, a lot of chili heat. I think it's worth noting that there's a lot of ramen both in and around the Heights. Like there's Rockin' Ramen at MKT, there's Shoku Ramen on Studewood, there's Jinya Ramen in the Heights Waterworks development on 19th Street. And then if you cross I-10, you could add Samurai Noodles, Ninja Ramen, you know, even Soma Sushi has always served a pretty good bowl of ramen. So I don't know how the Heights has become sort of ramen central in Houston, but that's our reality.
Inexpensive food for the hipsters, that's why.
Yeah, it goes well after a couple of drinks or as establishing a base for drinking more.
Yes.
So let me just throw it to you. I mean, you know, I don't think of you as a big ramen person, but you know, if I tell you that it's this like well thought of Los Angeles restaurant, is that enough to get you in the door? And if not, what would it take?
Yes, it is enough to get me in the door. Some of my favorite ramen experiences ever have been in downtown LA, like lines out the door for hours. You write your name down and pray that you get in within 2 hours. And anything that lights my mouth on fire, like Szechuan style or anything with spice or heat, I love. So I'm definitely there for that. I will say, and it's because it's close to where I live, but I love Kata's ramen. That's always my favorite. Their spicy soy ground pork ramen is my personal favorite in town. And I actually do eat it a lot, especially during like fall, winter months, like on a cold, rainy day. I definitely crave just something comforting, and that checks a box for me. So I do think there's room for this in the Heights. I do think maybe there's not room for as many of the same styles. So I hope that their style of ramen sets them apart from the rest.
I think that's a good point, right? That they are serving a different style of ramen than some of these other restaurants. And so people who try it and like it, presumably can go there exclusively for that one thing that they do. And I think that's a way to kind of establish their presence in the market. you know, I think it's worth noting, like, they have, you know, they see opportunity here, right? They're, you know, a second location will open on Westheimer, you know, maybe late 2023, early 2024. And then, you know, if they're both successful, then they could do even, you know, another location or two somewhere else in the city. So, you know, I'm certainly intrigued by this. I have to admit, this is not a style of ramen that I am personally familiar with. I tend to stick to kind of a more classic kind of tonkatsu shoyu, you know, ramen tatsuya style broth. But, you know, I like Sichuan cuisine. I like dandan noodles. So yeah, bring on the ramen version. Let's do it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll definitely try this out. Looking forward to it. Love anything from an LA style spot for sure.
Mary, that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurants of the week. Stick around. This podcast is brought to you by Green Street. Located in the heart of downtown Houston, Green Street celebrates delicious cuisine, exciting entertainment, and live music, all in a vibrant urban setting. Green Street is the perfect spot for a dinner and drinks before or after a big game downtown. Grab a bite al fresco from on-site restaurants such as Guadalajara del Centro, The Palm, House of Blues, or M&S Seafood Steaks and Oysters. Now, I'll have to say, I had the opportunity to visit The Palm, which relocated to downtown last year. It's an exciting update to just a classic Houston steakhouse, still with the prime steak, still with the giant lobsters, but in a refreshed and updated atmosphere. If you're not coming for dinner or after dinner, enjoy a drink and live entertainment from Pete's Dueling Piano Bar, or grab your friends and head to 810 Billiards and Bowling for a night of fun. Whatever the occasion, make Green Street your downtown destination of choice. Located at 1201 Fannin Street, go to greenstreetdowntown.com to see a full list of bars, restaurants, and entertainment destinations. That's greenstreetdowntown.com. Mary, for our restaurants of the week, I want to talk to you about Mala Sichuan Bistro, specifically the new location that has opened in the MKT mixed-use development in the Heights. This is the fifth Mala Sichuan to open in Houston. It features a really elegant design by Jin Design Group, as well as a cocktail program by Chris Frankel, who's a friend of the show. We know Chris from all over the place, but, you know, he was at Anvil for a long time. Now he's running El Segundo Swim Club, and he, you know, shows up here and there around town. Mary, let me throw it to you. What is your kind of existing relationship with Mala Sichuan, and what did you think of the new location?
I first experienced Mala Sichuan, believe it or not, when I had a, this goes into real estate, Mary, but when I had a property for sale out at their original location, and my mind was just blown. I think I had red oil dumplings the first time, and it was so good. I was excited when they came to Montrose, but I still felt like the original, I don't know, holds a special place. I know that they now have five locations. I'm excited about this Heights location. I think it's spot on for something that's missing in the Heights, and giving people the opportunity to have this type of food without having to drive 30 minutes or more, depending on rush hour, if you're trying to go to the OG location. But I'm excited to have them here. The menu is so expansive. The design's very fresh by Jen Braverman. And I think it's a welcome addition to the center. It's definitely different from anything else that is in this Heights shopping center.
Well, you know, you say that. I will say, I went to, Felice and I went to Blue Sushi Sake Grill a while back, and it has that kind of really lively, like, Japanese vibe, you know, very colorful, lots of stuff to look at. This is not like, this is a little more subtle, and it's Chinese, not Japanese. I realize that that's two completely different design languages, but, you know, eye-catching restaurants are kind of part of the, you know, Dagama is really pretty too. I think, you know, like, attractive restaurants have been part of the MKT experience. So this, in that sense, is of a piece with it. You know, the nice thing about our meal was that Corey Zhang, who's the one of the two owners with her husband, was there to guide us. And we just basically said, feed us, you know, you decide. And so we got to try a bunch of dishes that, you know, I don't usually get when I go to Mala. Like I didn't, you know, we didn't get Kung Pao chicken or the spicy crispy chicken or the red oil dumplings. You know, we let Corey choose. And so we wound up with things like, you know, beef brisket and golden soup, green tea, bacon, fried rice, Mala prawns with crispy rice cracker, squirrel tail fish with pine nuts, finger licking fragrant wings, and a slice of crepe cake, and the bamboo, the vegetable dish. So I don't know what stands out to you. What did you really enjoy? What would you order again?
The rice cakes and the shrimp were one of my favorites. Honestly, I had not had this dish at Mala before. I was happy that she picked that for us. I also thought that the squirrel tail fish was incredibly fresh, well prepared. I liked the flavors of that dish. The broth of the soup, the beef dish that we had, that broth was very unique and tangy and just wonderfully delightful. I really enjoyed that one. And then honestly, I don't get desserts at a lot of restaurants just because I think that they fall short and they're lackluster and I'm not impressed by them. A lot of times they're an afterthought. But the crepe cake, the Nutella crepe cake that we had so many very thin, delicately sliced layers, and it was delicious.
I would agree with you. I mean, I don't know if they're making that crepe cake. I don't know if they're buying it from somebody, but yeah, I mean, the layers were delicate. The Nutella flavor was rich and chocolatey, of course, as you would expect. Just a very satisfying, and you know, the proverbial sweet but not too sweet. You know, after spicy Sichuan food, I always want sweet. And if there hadn't been crepe cake, we would have walked right next door to Honey Child Sweet Cream, and I would have gotten ice cream. But you know, alas, crepe cake. Who can say no to crepe cake? But yes, I mean, I want to just echo everything that you said about the dishes we ate. You know, that beef broth, that beef brisket in the golden broth was just so like satisfying, and cold weather is coming. And it's like, it's the kind of the things I like about pho in terms of the protein and the, but like in a completely different way, like a completely different set of flavors, but just like, it was a big bowl, and I think I could have eaten the whole thing if kind of like left to my own devices. The shrimp were really nicely cooked. I thought the fish was great, a little bit sweet, which is a nice compliment to the spicy. And, you know, it's just a reminder that this is kind of the restaurant, you know, 10 plus years ago that introduced a lot of Houstonians to traditional Sichuan dishes, and they're still very much at the top of their game. And I was happy that we got to do this, and I can't wait to go back.
Absolutely. I think probably one of their, I mean, we can't change it, but I think one of their biggest problems is going to be, it's going to be so popular. It is definitely on a smaller to mid-size restaurant for this development. I think, in my opinion, it feels relatively small when you compare it to Dagama. And so I just think people that live in the Heights need to be, you know, plan ahead and or order carry out also. I mean, when we were there, I know they had just opened, but they already had all of their to-go services online, and people were definitely coming to pick up. I think they will absolutely crush it with to-go business being in this location in the Heights.
Absolutely. And then I also want to talk to you about Ciel. This is a French-inspired, Asian-influenced upscale restaurant that's coming to a condo tower right near River Oaks District. Now, this restaurant hasn't opened yet. It's not going to open until November or December, but we got a private preview tasting, not at the restaurant, in an adjacent space, just to kind of get a sense of what they're up to. It was really, as much as anything, a chance to meet their executive chef, Joseph Geiskopf, who worked many years ago at the French Laundry, spent about a year at Noma, but really the bulk of his experience is in LA, working for Jordan Kahn at restaurants like Red Medicine, Destroyer, and Vespertine. So, you know, Mary, you've opened restaurants, you've helped people hire chefs, you've done these tastings before. What should we take away from a private preview tasting that's not at the restaurant and not in the dining room and not with their equipment, but that just gives you some sense of the direction that they're going in?
I always get really excited about anyone who I think is going to elevate our dining scene, right? I think a lot of people don't take risks because they're worried that they won't be well received. This restaurant is definitely going to take some risks, and I think in a good way. I think, they are very intelligent about the sourcing of their ingredients. We started with a caviar dish that he has a relationship with a sustainable caviar producer. It was playful. It wasn't, so staid and serious like you would see at a lot of other fine dining restaurants. I thought the beef tartare that we had was really delicious. Obviously, we got to meet their pastry chef as well. She comes from MAD. I thought that was exceptionally well executed. So there was also sushi, which I found interesting. I think a lot of times I think of a place like Mastro's, for example, that has sushi on the menu, and I'm always kind of at odds with that. I'm like, oh, why do you have sushi? But anyway, I think this was well executed. It's hard to imagine what a space is going to be like if you aren't in it and haven't seen it. I haven't seen it yet, but I think this location and proximity to the Galleria and River Oaks District will allow it to draw from customers that are willing to take a risk. And I'm excited to see that. They're really These chefs that are involved are ambitious, they're excited, they're hungry to show Houston what they've got. And that always, I'm an eternal optimist. So I'm always excited to see what this younger generation coming up of chefs has to offer us.
I think that's all well said. I think, Joseph certainly brings a really interesting resume. Like you said, we had the, he has a relationship with a sustainable caviar producer, smoked beef tartare. I mean, that scallops and radish dish was like one of the best things I've eaten recently at any in any meal at any restaurant anywhere around town. And it's just a creative preparation. It's a combination that was unexpected and very tasty. And we talk about vibe dining or any of these high energy places where they want to they always say they want to do serious food, but they also want to have a nightlife component. They want to have a DJ, they want to have bottles, like whatever they want to do. And basically it's really hard to do both, right? It's hard to operate the food at a really high level and have that really high energy dining room. But to CL's credit, I mean, they've put together a team where obviously the food is really important. And so, we'll see what it's like when it all comes together in a month or two. But yeah, I'm with you, right? I want people to be successful. I'm always excited when people with resumes like this choose to move to Houston and open restaurants here. And so, bring it on. Like, fingers crossed. Like, let's see what this place is really like, and maybe it'll be the exception.
And I mean, for me, if I always, my compare and contrast analytical brain always is like, well, who's their closest competitor or what kind of customer will they have? I do think MAD in River Oaks District, the restaurant, sister restaurant of BCN, is probably their closest competition because, they do have a DJ on weekend nights later in the night. They do have a lively bar atmosphere. They do steer younger than their companion restaurant, BCN. And so, I think if you like MAD or if you've been to MAD and you like that kind of experience, I think you would want to check this out, right? And I think it's hard. You and I haven't been into the space and we haven't been in the actual restaurant. So it's hard to compare it to what might be its closest competitor. But I think if you like the vibe of MAD, you'll probably like the vibe of this.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think if you like the vibe at MAD, if you like the vibe at Musafir, but I do think it's going to be interesting to sort of compare, like, the because food wise, this is a restaurant that maybe could stand on its own with Bluedorn or Riel or any of our other favorite restaurants around town. But the atmosphere is going to be completely different, and how that food works with that atmosphere is a big question mark for me, but we'll see. Right. And it'll either be for me or it won't be for me. And if I love it, awesome. I'd be really excited to have a new place to be really excited about. And if not, then, you know, that's okay too. Cause Lord knows there's plenty of places that are very successful without my enthusiasm. So
I do think, you know, it's funny. I always talk about places of this is what I think they'll be, but I always tell operators, listen to the feedback of your guest and their experience, and they'll tell you what your place is. And I liken that to Clarkwood, one of my friends and yours as well's bar concept, that in the early days of it, we thought they would sell a lot of wine and cocktails, but it's definitely shown itself to be more of a cocktail type of place. And your customers, your demographic, they'll tell you what you are. So I think this restaurant will also, you know, it will evolve, and they'll need to listen to their customers, and that'll let them know what they'll be.
Absolutely. All right, Mary, I'm going to say that does it for the restaurant of the week. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And I will be right back with Morgan Weber and Matt Tanner. I am joined this week by two of the folks behind Easy's Liquor Lounge, a new bar coming any day to the Heights. Gentlemen, let me introduce you separately so people can hear your voices. Agricole Hospitality co-founder Morgan Weber, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Hey, man, I'm well. Thanks for having me on. It's been a minute.
It's been a minute. Thanks for doing this.
Of course.
Matt Tanner, partner in Easy's. It's your first time on the show. Welcome.
It is. Thank you for having me.
Matt, let me start with you, because I've known you for a long time. I mean, I remember when you were at Anvil, you were with Pappas Restaurants for a long time. Mm-hmm. How did you hook up with Agricole to do Easy's? Like, what made that seem like the right next move for you in your career?
We still don't know if that is the right move.
Fair point. So Morgan and I have known each other basically since Anvil ever started. What was that? 11 years ago, Morgan? 12 years ago now?
I think it was like
2009,
12.
Right? Yeah.
Anvil opened.
Yeah. So anyway, so we had been talking for a little while, just, you know, about different concepts that we kind of thought that we would want to open in the future, and just talking as friends. And I remember one night we're sitting around having a cigar, and Morgan had mentioned something about having the space on 3302 White Oak. And he started pitching some concepts, and then I don't remember how it came about, but somehow we got on the idea. It was like, well, what if we just threw like a neighborhood joint in there with like an old school vibe and really good cocktails? And we just kind of started going in and talking and talking and talking. And over like the next, I guess, what, a couple months or so, we just kind of honed in the idea. And Morgan had threw out, you know, hey, would you maybe want to partner with us on this? And that was that. At that point, it was sounded like a pretty good idea, because at the end of the day, it's I would have either stayed at Pappas for a long time or owned my own thing. And so, you know, Morgan and all the guys gave me the opportunity to do the other option than stay at Pappas.
Yeah, because I mean, in some ways, being the cocktail guy for the Pappas Restaurant Group, it's like the best bartending job in the world, right? It's You don't have to stay out late. You don't have to, like, maybe not a lot of customer interaction, but the lifestyle is pretty good.
Yeah, that's what I tried to tell him.
He's like, don't leave. Don't leave your job.
Morgan, let me swing it around to you. I mean, you know, you guys kind of got the opportunity to buy the bike shop, or to lease the bike shop next to Cultivare, maybe even before you kind of had a plan for it. So what did you kind of consider before settling on Easy's as the right idea?
Man, I'm actually trying to remember that. It's been so long. Like we had kind of internally said, we're not looking for another project. We always say that. But if the right one comes up, and we had always had our eye on that building just because it's the proximity to Cultivari is so amazing. And we're always trying to pick up extra parking spaces for Cultivari. So that's not why we did this project, obviously, but it we realized that this section of White Oak does not have a lot of parking. And it was like, man, it would be pretty cool to kind of control most of this block. And we knew we wanted to do a bar. We did not want to do another restaurant. I think we might have kicked a couple of restaurant ideas around early on, but we really wanted to explore the idea of what would it look like if we opened a bar that was kind of the type of bar that we want and enjoy sitting and drinking at. And we started thinking about what kind of bars those are. And I've always gravitated to neighborhood joints. I mean, I've had so many blackout nights at Shiloh Club that I can't even like count them on one hand, but on two hands. So when Matt and I started talking, you know, Agricole is and was at a point where if we don't have the right people to kind of jump into new concepts, there's no way for us to grow, even if we wanted to. And at that point, Matt was, I know Matt enjoyed his tenure at Pappas, but I feel like I'm not going to speak for you, Matt, but we had had some conversations about, you know, there's a ceiling there. And with owning your own business, there's a lot of risks that come with that. But, you know, the sky's kind of the limit to what it could be. So when we really started talking about what Easy's could be, you know, way before we even had a name, we were pretty dialed in on what a neighborhood bar would look like, kind of filtered through our lens. And, you know, we keep going back to dive bar, and, you know, people have said, oh, you guys are opening a dive bar. And like, we're not opening a dive bar. Maybe 30 years from now, it'll be considered that. But I do feel like that's one of those names that's earned over time. You don't just like open up a place like, oh, we're a dive bar now. So
new and dive bar don't make sense together.
Those two words don't go together.
But you know, I've been a collector of random crap for years, and Matt too. And I loved the idea of, you know, some of those old restaurants in the 80s that I grew up going to with my parents in small towns, and my folks weren't really bar goers, but I loved the nostalgia of certain items and the certain feeling that you get when you used to walk into those just kind of neighborhood places that have kind of gone away over time. There's like certain elements that you kind of took for granted that you'd always see in these places that just disappeared over time. So we really wanted to open a place in the Heights that kind of reminded people that come in, reminded guests of the nostalgia of times past, if you will. And boy, that sent us down a rabbit hole that we have yet to recover from.
All right. Well, I have a couple of different angles I want to go with, but Matt, let me bring you back in. Maybe kind of talk about the process of assembling all of these vintage items that are kind of establishing the mood and the decor at Easy's. Cause I've seen some pictures. It looks like it must've been quite a shopping expedition to put all this together.
Man, you know, when Morgan talks about rabbit holes, this truly is just one of those things where you could, let's just start with eBay, for instance. It's like, oh, you know, it'd be great to have a Miller High Life sign. Well, next thing you know, 3 hours later, you know, you've hit the end of eBay. You're now searching through, you know, Craigslist and Mercari and whatever else, like Marketplace. And all you started with was like, oh, let's see what kind of old Miller High Life stuff there is. And next thing you know, it's like, oh, I think I have a
pretty good one.
Yeah.
Which one?
Yeah. Yeah. And it, then, you know, then it's like something, you'll see something random while you're, you know, just searching around on eBay. It's like, oh, well, here's a dead squirrel, you know, curled up around a Miller High Life can. It's like, oh, well, let me see what kind of bad taxidermy I can find. And then you go jump down another, you know, rabbit hole. And so you could either, like, it all just kind of, it would start at one, like, small little thing of like, oh, man, this would be kind of cool to put in the bar. And then next thing you know, like 5 hours later, or you find yourself at an estate sale across town just to pick up one item. And then you're like, you know, just digging through everything that they have. And it's just the most random, nonsensical thing out there that is a lot of fun to do.
It has truly been the most fun thing to dial in the interiors on of anything I have ever worked on in my life. Like, because it's on, I don't want to say anything goes, but if it's weird, it gets considered.
Yeah, but you got to balance that, like, tacky, you know, retro. Like, you don't want it to be kitschy, right? You don't want to, or do you not? Like,
I'm just kidding.
It's your bar.
No, there is a super fine line, because I think Matt and I both love all the old advertising from the 50s, 60s, and 70s that bourbon companies used to spend a lot of energy on. And, you know, modern bourbon advertising just doesn't have the swagger that a lot of that old stuff had. So
not even close.
We definitely tend to say yes, probably more often than we should, to things like advertising. And so we get all that stuff up. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, we've been collecting stuff for 3 years because we had the time. Thank you, City of Houston, to really kind of explore as much as we wanted to. So we had kind of forgotten about a lot of the stuff we had bought, and we get in there, unbox it all, lay it out. And then it's just like a puzzle piece thing all over the walls. And we realized after kind of that first round of hanging stuff up, we're like, man, we have way too much bourbon advertising. So, you know, it is a fine line. It's a fine line of really cool stuff like the ads and signage and whatnot, but then also bringing in elements from those eras that we were definitely aware of when they happened, but they've probably forgotten about a little bit. So it is a fine line, and we definitely haven't finished. We might never finish. I feel like we've probably got about 50% of what we actually need.
I don't think this place never gets finished.
Yeah, but I mean, that's one of my favorite things about a lot of my favorite neighborhood bars around the country. It's like they're never completed. And I think every time you go in and you start scanning the walls or scanning the shelves, you're like, that's new and that's weird. And it makes me think of something in my past. So I don't know. It's an ode to a different era, which is fun for me, at least. And it's meant to not take itself too seriously.
Right. An era when, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, like, none of us were actually old enough to go to bars, right? Like,
yeah, great point.
you're right on the, like we're right on the cusp. Like, I remember smoking in bars, but it's been a long time and I don't miss it at all. I feel no nostalgia for leaving a bar smelling like an ashtray. Right.
I remember getting off work in college and going to the bar and like leaving. And I was just, you'd wake up the next day and just like, oh, I smell terrible.
Oh, I mean, yeah. You would have to, you basically have to undress as soon as you walked in the door and shower before you went to, like, you just, cause otherwise you just wake up smelling like the stuff is terrible.
Yeah. That's probably the only thing that we're missing. Is like when you walk in, you smell fresh citrus juice instead of a mix of cigarettes and Fabuloso.
You know, the one other reason that I would never call Easy's a dive bar is because dive bars, the drinks kind of suck. And I've been to every agricole hospitality concept multiple times, and the drinks are always great.
Well, thank you.
So how do you honor the spirit of, like, the atmosphere you've created, but like drinks that taste good?
Well, you make them taste good.
Yeah. I mean, like, are we talking like strawberry daiquiris and Long Island iced tea? Like, how far are you leaning into this?
I wouldn't say that we're totally leaning into, like, I would say that those are kitschy cocktails that would like fit the theme, but it's not really, I don't think that fits the personality of this place. So
I think it's fair to say that the drinks are definitely probably the biggest departure from the idea of the dive bar. It's like, we love that environment. We obviously want to maintain a very high-low kind of vibe, but I think we're over the hump in America in general of people coming into a place and expecting a good drink if you have previous reputations for doing that. So I don't see us kind of purposefully going in and you know, making bad cocktails like they did in the olden days. Their Sprite will not be a part of our old fashioned.
No, please don't.
Yeah. But, you know, the whole idea behind, you know, drinks over here is that they are simple, approachable, well-executed cocktails, but we're, you know, it's not a cocktail bar. So the thing is that if you want a drink, it will be made proper. No shortcuts will be taken, but at the same time, you know, it's not like we're going to have a giant list of cocktails. You know, it's not like we're going to have the Amble 100 list hanging around over here. It's more just, here's a short menu of drinks that are all excellent, but also here's a whole list of beers. If you want a bucket of them, we got it for you. If you want some wine to sip on, we have that as well. So it's just truly, like, I think a well-rounded drink program that suits this neighborhood to the T.
It's a little bit of everything and not, you know, excessive on really anything. You know, I think the last we counted at 8 Row Flint, we've got about 70 cocktails on the menu, which when I heard that number, I was like, that's way too many cocktails. But, you know, 8 Row's got, you know, 350 deep on Mexican spirits, 300 or 400 American whiskey options. Like, 8 Row on that part is the excessive, right? And this is just a little bit of everything to check every box or scratch every itch for most of the humans that want to come in here. And the devil's in the details, right? We want to take everything that we do extremely seriously, but we don't want anybody that walks in the building to, like, be thinking about that when they come in to have a drink.
Right. It should look, the incredible amount of thought and preparation should look completely effortless from the customer's perspective.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, that we'll see what happens, but.
And then just talk to me about food a little bit, because, you know, when we first talked about this a couple months ago, I think that was something you were still kind of thinking through.
Yeah, so food's going to be kind of small bites, but there will be items that are substantial if you are hungry. So we're going to have, like, a glorious hot dog roller. I'm going to do,
like, gas station style.
Yeah. We're going to be serving up RC Ranch hot dogs. Then we'll also have a vegan option as well. With that comes chili, because you can't have hot dogs without chili. So we can do chili dogs. We're also going to do, like, Frito pies. And then we'll have just, like, fun dips as well. So, you know, really great pimento cheese. We'll do queso, because, I mean, who doesn't love queso?
Right, and you're doing queso, and you're doing queso at 8 Row, so it's not like a huge stretch to do queso.
Yeah.
And we're in Texas.
Yeah. Right. Then also, like, we'll have pickled jalapeno French onion dip served with East Texas, like, firecrackers. And then, you know, for, like, our meat and cheese, we'll have, like, summer sausage with cubed up, you know, smoked cheddar, and just fun stuff that I used to love on road trips as a kid, basically. And then things you'd have at, like, family gatherings.
Keeping it simple, but excellent.
So, I mean, I've driven past the space recently. It basically, from the outside, peeking in through the windows, it looks like you're basically ready to go. Do you know when you're going to be opening?
Hopefully within like the next 2 weeks.
We are virtually done. We are waiting on our, I'm not going to swear. We're waiting on our sprinkler riser crap to be buttoned up. And that is like one of the only things that is keeping us from opening the door, which is maddening, because we are ready. We're staffed up, trained, we're ready to go. So we were thinking it was going to happen this week, and then that got pushed by a week. So we're really, really, really hoping for a soft opening late next week and then pull the ripcord. So of course, if the city doesn't cooperate in that, it'll get pushed a week, but I don't see it. We're just out of hurdles, you know. They've thrown what they could at us, but we've basically exhausted them.
And then Morgan, I do have a couple other things I want to ask you about. Get a little bit philosophical with me. I mean, you guys opened Revival what, in like 2010?
2011. Yeah, March of 2011.
And then Cultivari in 14, right? Early 14?
Correct.
I mean, that stretch of white oak has changed so much over the years. How do you kind of see the state of white oak now, and how do you kind of see Cultivari and Easy's, you know, in a world where, you know, there's Little Woodrow's and permit, like at high low, right? Bobcat, from Bobcat Teddy's to Permission Whiskey, right? You can have whatever kind of experience you want on that stretch of street. Where do you see yourselves kind of fitting in with everything else?
Man, honestly, the further I get into this industry, the less I feel like I truly understand it. But if you would have told me 10 or 11 years ago that when we opened Revival, that east end of White Oak would be just exploding like it is, and that the neighborhood could sustain it, I would have probably told you you're out of your mind. And then every time I drive down that street at 11 o'clock at night and it's absolutely exploding with human beings, I have no idea. But like, you know, Cultivari is on its best year to date, which we're just blown away by year after year. And I feel like with Benny Thunders opening and now Easy's, I kind of feel like there's an opportunity for the east side of White Oak and the west side of White Oak to just start kind of bleeding together a little bit more, which I certainly don't hate. I love the synergy of all those bars and restaurants. But it is grown, and it is doing better as a street than anything I could have ever comprehended. I mean, it was not 2 years or 3 years before we opened Revival Market where there were still like prostitutes walking up and down that street. So to see kind of where it's at now is just, it's impressive. And I just hope that, you know, Easy's kind of rides that line between people that have dinner at Cultivari and then they kind of want a nightcap and it's just so easy and close that they want to hobble over there and knock a couple more back, or maybe they start before they go to dinner with that. And then I think it's a good opportunity that is existing with all the synergy that's going down on the east end of White Oak for people to mosey on down, and just the whole street becomes a bar hopping kind of situation.
I mean, maybe you'll tell Leonora to tell people the wait's half an hour longer than it is, so they are motivated to go to Easy's and have a drink. I'm, you know, anything's possible.
I'm not above it.
And then let me just ask you one other thing, because, you know, obviously you guys have been, you've been busy. You're bringing 8 Row Flint to the East End. Maybe just talk a little bit about kind of that opportunity and kind of where you're at in that process. And, sure. And really just selfishly, because I live basically down the street from it, when am I going to be drinking ranch waters and eating tacos at the new 8 Row Flint?
I mean, it's a little, I feel like I'm always elusive when you ask these questions, and I don't do that intentionally, but we're really just doing cosmetic updates there. The Root Lab guys and Night Shift guys built an absolutely beautiful bar. It's unfortunately a little too nice to be 8 Row, so we have a little bit of cosmetic work to kind of bring it bring it into that eight row kind of world and headspace. But and we also applied for a new liquor license. We didn't assume their liquor license. So that's a 45 to 60 day thing. Honestly, if we don't hit any unforeseen roadblocks, we're really hoping for November, December of this year.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Cause I spent a lot of time at night shift and now, I mean, with Cafe Louie kind of blowing up right down the street, it's like, they're talking about synergy. You know, it's just,
yeah,
to have.
Yeah. And you know, we have the team, we've moved a couple people from, Eight Row Heights over to Eight Row East. And, you know, Christina's kind of concept director over both now, and Marcelo's doing food over both. So that whole thing would have never happened if we didn't already have like human beings in place that knew kind of how Eight Row operates on a daily basis from the ethos and culture and whatnot. Christian Garza's been at Eight Row Heights for 3 or 4 years and just such an awesome dude. And, you know, he's moving over there to be the GM. It's been a lot of, you know, internal people that are going to kind of help make that happen. So without the people, we could have never even considered doing it.
And then let me ask you about the spirits business, because I know the last time you were on, I think it was to talk about, you know, you were getting into the whiskey business, you were selling.
Yeah, it was the Ivy Mountain days.
That's right. And I feel like you've kind of shifted. I know that it's called Marfa Spirits Company, but I have to admit, I don't know that much about it. So let me just turn you loose. Like, what are you doing in that world?
Yeah. I mean, Josh Shepard, Seth Siegel Gardner, and I founded that business in 2018. We've been traveling out there just kind of recreationally for years. And, you know, when we opened Anvil and we're kind of looking for interesting new spirits, you know, Sotol was one of those that kind of was slightly available only through Hacienda de Chihuahua, which is kind of the most basic of Sotols out there. But it was interesting, and it was kind of, you know, from a place that's relatively close to Texas. And so that really spurred the initial interest in that spirit. And then by the time we opened Eight Row, you know, we could get 5 or 6 different iterations of Sotol in from Chihuahua. And then over the last like 5 or 6 years, you know, there's 35 available or so. They're being imported into Texas now. And as I would go out there and as I would kind of hunt these bottles down, you know, drinking through the different iterations from all over the state of Chihuahua or Coahuila or Sonora, Durango, depending on where that plant grows, it can have such a wildly different flavor profile. You know, I know we see that in agaves and mezcal and such, but the differences between the Sotol plant species are not as widely varied as agaves. And so you kind of have to attribute a lot of the diversity in those flavor profiles to the different places in which they're growing, whether it's in these high Sierras or in the desert or down in kind of the subtropical regions in the southern part of the state. It was not lost on me that all these plants grow in and around all over West Texas, wild and unused. So we started kicking around the idea in early 2018, and it got some legs pretty quickly, shopped it around to some investors, which we got some traction on, and we felt good enough about buying this old 1917 era building in downtown Marfa in 2018, and then went under a really extensive renovation. Got totally railroaded by the pandemic. None of our construction guys could work, and so we basically lost that year. But we launched in August of 2021 and opened the distillery officially in October of 2021. And so now we're just in that place where we don't really know what we're doing, but we're figuring it out as we go and trying to make the best decisions that we can.
So what are you producing right now? And I know it's all, I know it's all available here in Houston. So
yeah, yeah. Right now, our the first project we came out with was actually a collaboration with a sotolero in Chihuahua. His name's Jacobo Jaquez. He's a sixth generation sotol maker, based out of Janos, Mexico, which is about 2.5 hours southwest of Juarez. And we got introduced a couple years ago, and we started talking about how cool it would be to work together on like more of a binational product, because there is a lot of conversation recently, but it has been, you know, talked about for the last 4 or 5 years. It's like, okay, so Texas is not in the denomination of origin for sotol in Mexico because of the USMCA trade agreement. But we do have another distillery in Texas producing sotol and calling it such on their label. How do you play in the same sandbox together, or should you? There's been a lot of questions about that.
Yeah, there's a whole issue of cultural appropriation, right? Like whether you should be using that word to describe what it is you're producing.
Right, exactly. So when we started working with Jacobo early 2021, you know, his stance on it was, this is a category that in America and in Mexico, there's just not a lot of awareness around. And if we start calling it a bunch of different names, it's going to get confusing really quickly. And we should all just call it sotol, and we should all lean into that. And we should all kind of do this together. Rising tides lift all ships mentality. And we thought, well, there'd be no better way to kind of explore that than working together. So part of that process is done at his distillery in Janos, and it's finished in Marfa. Our original idea was to actually do the first distillation in Janos and do the second distillation in Marfa. So it's actually truly distilled in both places. The USDA and the Mexican version of that did not really know how to handle that product coming across the border through customs. So it wasn't a finished finished spirit product, but it also wasn't a raw agricultural product. It was like lying in one of these gray areas. So we just were like, okay, do the first two distillations in Janos, and then we can proof, bottle, and filter it and blend it in Marfa. So we're still working on that, but it's been a lot of brain damage. and we're starting to work with three other sotoleros in Mexico, kind of on the same thing. We're able to pay them because we also are importers, but we don't have to realize that importing margin that most importers will put on the product for doing that. So we're able to pay them more. We still charge what we need to charge, but we're really trying to get these bottles to on-premise accounts for a reasonable price so they can use them in drinks. I don't think there's any reason a lot of these bottles should be $80. Or $90 a bottle. So we've spent a lot of time working on that. But we do the collaborative sotol. We just released in February or March our first Texas spirit made from the sotol plant. We are not calling it sotol. We made that decision. It's called Desert Spirit, but it is made from 100% sotol plants. But we did not want to go against the denomination of origin that exists in Mexico, even though we could, I guess. And then we do a gin, a vodka, a really, really interesting rum made from sugarcane molasses that's coming from the last sugarcane processing plant in Texas. It's a blend of that and Louisiana sugarcane. We do a long, crazy ferment, get some beautiful, beautiful esters and congeners out of that. But and then we do an orange and a grapefruit liqueur. We're working on some other products as well, but those are the ones in the current lineup.
Yeah, I got to say, because I still have a little of that peach brandy you made back in the day.
Oh, I'm still hoarding some of it.
That was pretty tasty. That was a big hit.
Yeah, that was. We were all that. I hate that did not work out. They don't always work out, but I really miss that peach brandy. We do have plans to do it in Marfa. There was actually a pretty big peach growing culture out there during the late 1800s and well into the 1900s. And Cibolo Creek Ranch, which is just south of Marfa, made peach brandy and apple brandy from their trees until about the 1930s, I think. 1930s, 1940s. So they still have the actual pot still that came from that ranch in the 1850. So it might very well be one of the oldest pot stills in the state of Texas, and it's still in pretty good condition. So we're going to send that pot still off and get it looked at to make sure it's safe to use or repair it if it's not. And the plan is to fire up peach brandy on that sucker again one day. We just need more time.
Right.
Yeah.
Matt, let me bring this back to you. I didn't mean to cut you off for quite so long, but
no, all good.
I mean, you're getting ready to open. It's been a minute since you've I know you've been working here and there at you know, Cultivari and 8 Row, but like, you know, since you've been like really in the thick of it, are you like doing curls or something to get your cocktail shaking arms back? I mean, like, are you ready for this? Because I think you're going to be pretty busy.
Oh man, yeah, I'm very ready for it. Even though I did not bartend regularly at Pappas, you know, I still would help with opening of new restaurants, which, you know, had basically, I did a whole bunch of training for a bunch of different people, which, you know, at the end of the day, I was making cocktails almost every other day, just not in volume. But, you know, being able to work at Miss Carousel and Cultivari and all that, you know, bounced me right back into the groove. So I might be a little sore for a couple weeks, but I think after that, I'll be fine.
All right. Well, gentlemen, I got to say that brings me to the end of my questions. Is there anything I haven't asked you about that you would like to discuss?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head. Matt?
Yeah. Me neither.
All right, we want people to come in and have a good old time.
I want to be one of those people that's coming in and having a good old time. So I'm looking forward to this.
Excellent.
We're looking forward to having you.
Well, before I let you go, we have to play the lightning round. Ooh. Matt, since you've never done this before.
Okay.
Five easy questions, five short answers. Just say the first thing that comes to mind. Matt, what is your favorite spirit to use in cocktails?
Tequila.
What is the first band you ever saw in concert?
ZZ Top.
What is your fast food guilty pleasure? It has to come from a restaurant with a drive-thru.
Whataburger.
Who is your favorite Houston sports figure, past or present?
Nolan Ryan.
And then finally, when you go to a pizzeria for the first time, what are your go-to toppings?
Pepperoni. And jeez, that's like, I'm basic on that one. if you mess that up, then it's kind of hard to trust all the other pies.
All right. Give us the website, the social media, everything for Easy's Liquor Lounge.
So website is easysliquorlounge.com. And then the Instagram is at Easy's Liquor Lounge. Same with Facebook.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you, Eric.
Eric, thanks for having us on, man. Always a pleasure.
You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.